The reunion of father and daughter is just as it should be. The pressure in both of them disappears. Tears of happiness well up. Unfortunately, moments like this can't last.
Welcome back to the Short Runs Podcast. My name is Dan Oakes, and I'm a comic book collector from St. Louis, Missouri. Well, it's good to be back after a break. We just wrapped up the first season of the Short Runs Podcast a few weeks ago. We've gotten a lot of good comments regarding the podcast, so thank you to all those folks who are sending those digital letters in to us. Season 2 is upon us. And this episode, we'll cover one of my favorite and often ignored Marvel supergroups of the 1970s, the Champions.
Dooby-dooby-doo, where are you? We got some work to do now. Scooby-dooby-doo, where are you? We need some help from you now.
So who are we talking about today? According to the Marvel Comics website, they describe the Champions as follows. At the time, there were very few heroes on the West Coast, but the Champions filled that void for a while. Angel bankrolled the team and even purchased a Quinjet for them. However, that kind of lent some credence to the idea that they were second-rate Avengers. Darkstar eventually joined the Champions, while Bill Foster, aka Goliath, served as an honorary member. The original series ran for 17 issues, and the team was officially disbanded in the Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man issues 18. Team's members included Angel. So Angel is a mutant with large wings growing out of his back. He has the power of flight and is rather wealthy. His civilian identity is Warren Worthington III. Black Widow is a well-trained Russian spy. She has the skills in espionage as well as being a gifted athlete. She also has a type of blaster attached to her wrist that delivers what she calls a widow's bite. Darkstar is a Russian as well. She has the ability to levitate and fly at high speeds, and she also has the ability to manipulate this extra-dimensional energy called the Dark Force. The next member is Ghost Rider, and he has two forms. In his human form, he is Johnny Blaze, expert motorcycle stunt rider. In his Ghost Rider form, he can harness supernatural powers that increase all of his natural abilities to superhuman abilities. He's also got this thing called the Penance Stare that will pretty much take down anybody. And then there's Hercules, and he is an ancient Greek demigod. He's got the ability to drink as much as Thor, but I'm not sure that's really his superpower. He also has incredible strength and invulnerability. Iceman is a mutant like the Angel, and he has the ability to turn his body into hardened ice. He can also project ice in any shape, including footpaths that allow him to glide or travel over areas that most individuals cannot. I would describe the Champions as Marvel's group of misfits, almost akin to the other Marvel group of misfits, the Defenders. These second-tier superheroes were thrown together to see if the sum was greater than the parts. It is a weird and quirky group of superheroes whose creative dysfunction behind the scenes seem to play out in the pages of the comics as well. My first issue of The Champions was issue 16. I got this comic pretty early in my comic collecting history. My mom would frequent these used bookstores when I was around 12 or 13, and this would have been in the early 1980s. There was one particular used bookstore that always had a stash of comics, At the time, the X-Men and the Avengers were my group of choice, and on the cover of Champions issue 16 is Magneto fighting several characters from both groups. Beast and Iceman fight alongside the Black Widow and Hercules. Ghost Rider is thrown in for good measure. So this was an easy choice for me to beg my mom to buy the comic for me. Anytime one of my favorite characters or teams made an appearance on a cover, I always nabbed that issue. That turned out to be a really good strategy for collecting key issues. Well played, Marvel. This issue of Champions was my only issue for years. It wasn't until around 2021 that I finally had all of the issues in this short series. I still get giddy looking at Champions issue 1. That issue evaded me for a very long time. I found the majority of the back issues in the wild, but there were a couple that I had to order through mycomicshop.com. Cover date for the first issue of the Champions is October 1975. My CLZ app has a release date of July 15th, 1975. It makes sense that Marvel would roll out a new supergroup comic in the middle of the summer. One of the things that comes up is that there is a difference between cover dates and release dates, and those things mean different things in the comic industry. This comic has a cover date of October, but was actually in the stores on the spinner racks in July. This comic is also considered to be in the Bronze Age of comics. Just a reminder, the Bronze Age runs from 1970 to about 1983. During this period, the general accepted description of this age is that it has characteristics such as attention to realism, taking on social issues, and a transition of comics starting to be written for a larger audience than just children. It is also a time when the Comics Code Authority is starting to loosen up. So some good examples from this time period are Conan 1 from 1970, the Tomb of Dracula series from 1972, issue 85 of the Green Lantern series, which was an anti-drug issue. I considered the Champions release to be in the early Bronze Age. There are 17 issues in the series and no annual. I would also add that there are 7 additional issues of other Marvel series that cross over into the 17 issues of the Champion series. They are Iron Man Annual 4, Godzilla Number 3, Avengers 163, Supervillain Team Up 14, Spectacular Spider-Man Issues 17 and 18, and lastly, The Incredible Hulk Annual 7. These additional issues wrap up storylines that, for the most part, originated in the issues of the Champions series. Tony Isabella and Don Heck are given credit for creating the team, the Champions. The writers for this series basically fall into 2 periods. Roughly, the first 7 issues are written by Tony Isabella, with issue 3 being an exception and being written by Chris Claremont. The later half was written by Bill Mantlo. Wikipedia states,
"Publication continued to be erratic. The series went back and forth between monthly and bi-monthly throughout its run. The creative team saw an unexpectedly high level of turnover, with 12 different writer, penciler, inker combinations over the course of just 17 issues. In addition to Don Heck, artists who drew the series included George Tuska, Bob Hall, and John Byrne. Starting with issue 8, the remainder of the series was written and penciled by industry newcomers still learning their craft, with the sole exception of that final issue, which was penciled by Tuska. Though the reason for this is not known, it has been hypothesized that the series was already on the brink of cancellation at this point, making it a less risky place to field rookie creators."
The comic is printed on newsprint paper, common with comic books of the 1970s. The cover is a glossy print, and it has a cover price of 25 cents for the first issue, and the last issue, issue 17, has a cover price of 35 cents. The series ran from the cover dates of October 1975 to January 1978. To provide some context for what was happening to Marvel Comics in the year 1975, I refer to the book Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe. He states,
over the years, Stan Lee and then Roy Thomas had learned how to cede some of their supervision over content. Lee's policy was, according to Claremont, they miss deadlines, you give them a warning, and then you fire them. If the book doesn't sell, you fix it, or you cancel the book and fire their ass. If it sells, you shut up and get out of the way. You don't micromanage. There isn't time, there's too much to do. It wasn't quite as easy for Ween and Wolfman. It's not that I think Len and Marv didn't want to do the same thing, but they seemed more willing to step in, said Roy Thomas. They might have been more nervous about letting a writer of a not a particular successful book do something that they didn't feel comfortable with. They might have worried that they would go out there and get their limbs sawed off. A new title called The Champions was proposed by Tony Isabella as a vehicle for the discarded X-Men, Angel, and Iceman, a two guys on the road serial in the spirit of Route 66. But according to Isabel, Ween began applying a succession of rules that called for changes. It had to be a team of five characters. It had to include a woman. It had to include a character that already has his own title as well. It had to include someone with super strength. The Champions eventually became a weird mutt of a comic in which thoroughly mismatched Angel, Iceman, Black Widow, Ghost Rider, and Hercules teamed up to fight villains like the bankrupted Recession Raiders in Los Angeles.
Other comics that were released in 1975 included the following Marvel comic releases: Giant Size X-Men 1, Uncanny X-Men 94, which is the first issue that Chris Claremont takes over as writer, Inhumans 1, The Invaders 1, and in DC, they were publishing Batman issues running in the issue range of around 260. They were running Flash issues around the issues 230. The Joker series had just started, as well as the Sandman series. So this was also a time when the DC explosion was done by DC to flood the market with different titles to try and catch up with Marvel, who was outperforming them in sales. During the DC explosion, many of those titles did not last. So an issue-by-issue summary of each of the 17 issues in the Champions series starts off with issue number one, The World Still Needs the Champions. And this is a part one of three-part story. Courage made them heroes, fate made them champions. Can a former super spy, two mutants, and a demigod and a demon carry on in the tradition of the mighty Avengers and the Fantastic Four? In this issue, each of the main heroes have different fights with individuals that come from the Olympic goddess Venus. The story ends in issue 3. It is called Assault on Olympus. And at the end of this issue, their conflict with the villain is resolved, and the last panel has the team leaving Olympus and heading back to their world. The fourth issue is a standalone issue for the most part. It's mutant skill and hellfire versus Olympian strength as the champion's most powerful member, Hercules, turns against the group. Who could have done this to the scion of Zeus and why? This issue was written by Chris Claremont and is basically a filler issue between the next storyline for issues 5 and 6, which are part 1 and part 2. And the title of that is The Economy is So Bad That a Down on His Luck Inventor Constructs a Suit of Armor Whose Power Rivals That of the Invincible Iron Man. Can even the champions of Los Angeles hope to defeat the power of Rampage? And then in issue 6, Mad Dogs and Businessmen, is part 2 of that story. Rampage has single-handedly dismantled the champions. If Black Widow, Hercules, Angel, and Iceman can't learn how to fight as a team, quickly their careers as Los Angeles champions might be over before it begins. Then in issue 7, this becomes part 1 of 4 for a story that will go through issues 7, 8, 9, and 10. The premise of this story is the man who created the Black Widow. The Black Widow and Ivan's past catch up with them as the Soviet Union has sent their most dangerous agents, the Savage Griffin and the mysterious Dark Star. And this is her first appearance. As if that wasn't bad enough, an even more dangerous adversary waits in the wings. Plus, in this issue, you meet the man who created the Black Widow. That story continues through issues 8, 9, and 10. And in issue 10, One Man's Son is Another Man's Poison, part 4 of 4. The Soviets are getting away with the Black Widow and Ivan in tow, and the champions are powerless to stop them. If the brash son of Zeus breaks them free from their prison, the city of Los Angeles will be destroyed. Can the power of the spirit of vengeance calm the Lion of Olympus, or will his demon presence have the opposite effect? Plus, someone who has a change of heart and switches teams. Don't miss the earth-shattering conclusion to the champions battle with the Crimson Dynamo, Titanium Man, Griffin, and Dark Star. Obviously, this is the issue where Dark Star changes from a villain to a hero. In issues 11, The Shadow from the Star, this is a three-part story. It guest stars Hawkeye, Goliath, Dark Star, and Two-Gun Kid. When the champion's air cruiser careens out of control, only the power of Goliath can save them. Meanwhile, in the Arizona desert, Ghost Rider, ex-Avenger Hawkeye, and the Wild West hero, the Two-Gun Kid, discover an impending danger that they'll need the champions alive to help them stop. That story carries on through issue 13, and that is called The Doom That Went On Forever. This also guest stars the character Goliath. While Hercules, Angel, Black Widow, and the Ghost Rider fight for their lives against the Possessor, an immortal elder of the universe and his demon hordes, Iceman, Darkstar, Goliath use all their strength and courage to save the universe from total destruction. In issue 14, it's titled The Creature Called Swarm, and this is a two-part story, and this is actually the first appearance of the villain Swarm. Can the champions hope to defeat a fiend who can control the sting of a million bees? What is this mysterious villain after? And what does it mean for the future of mankind? Meanwhile, Hercules and Iceman are attacked at Champions headquarters by their own defenses. Plus, the team says goodbye to one of their own. In issue 15, the storyline with Swarm ends. Can the champions hope to defeat the insect menace of Swarm, Lord of the Killer Bees? If they can't, mankind is doomed. Plus, who is responsible for the hero's own headquarters' unprovoked attack? In the penultimate issue, issue 16, this is a part 2 of 2 story. This story originated and started in the supervillain team-up issue 14. Magneto and the Beast desperately search for allies to end Dr. Doom's world domination. The unlikely duel stops in Los Angeles to ask the champions for help, but the West Coast heroes have been afflicted by Dr. Doom's neurogas. After a terrible fight, the Master of Magnetism learns that Doom has taken over the White House, so the X-Men's longtime foe and Beast rush to Washington, D.C. with the champions in hot pursuit. And once the Hulk joins the party on the White House lawn, then the chaotic clash erupts. Magneto versus Dr. Doom, the Green Goliath versus the Lion of Olympus, the Beast and Ghost Rider versus Angel and Iceman. This is a rare battle between those Marvel heavyweights. In issue 17, which is the final issue, entitled Death Drone, the champions are challenged by the mutant-hunting Sentinel Robots. And if that wasn't bad enough, the Vanisher and his Brotherhood of Evil Mutants wait in the shadows to destroy whichever side wins. To see the final fate of the champions, go to Spectacular Spider-Man issues 17 and 18, and this essentially ends the series. For related characters and tie-ins, as I stated before, there are some additional issues that tie directly into the series, and I'll repeat those again. It's Iron Man Annual 4, Godzilla number 3, Avengers 163, Supervillain Team Up 14, and Spectacular Spider-Man 17 and 18, and then lastly, that Incredible Hulk Annual 7. These additional issues wrap up the storylines that, for the most part, originated in the issues of the Champion series. According to CLZ, there are a couple key issues, but they are all minor keys. And so issue 1 is a minor key, issue 5 is a minor key, issue 7 is a minor key, and issue 14. My thoughts on reading this? While I love all the characters in this team, they frankly never quite come together as a cohesive set of stories, much less a cohesive team. The characters on this team are so different from one another, which could have made it for a really interesting series, but I felt like it stepped on itself more than it probably should have. Also, the characters didn't always seem to be themselves, but rather imitations of themselves. I personally would love to see this group come back today as a new comic and have it written by, say, Rainbow Rowell or Tom King. Having said all that, I still have a huge place in my heart for this particular series. What became of the Champions? According to Marvel Comics, in the aftermath of the Civil War, Tony Stark attempted to resurrect the Champions name as a California superhero team in the 50 States Initiative. However, for in-universe reasons that aren't entirely clear, the team was rebranded as The Order. Within the pages of The Order, which came out in 2007, readers were introduced to a new set of heroes that had nothing to do with the original Champions. And unlike the original Champions, the Order were largely lesser-known heroes who were getting a second chance in life. In 2016, Marvel launched a new series under the title of Champions, but this group consisted of Kamala Khan, aka Miss Marvel, Miles Morales, aka Spider-Man, and Sam Alexander, aka Nova. This group morphed and continued for a couple different versions of the team, as well as different comic series. Again, it had no direct tie to the original Champions from 1975, except for the name. Where can you find these issues of the Champions? Actually, in good luck, because there are a number of places to find these various issues of the 17-issue series. First, you can find it on Marvel Unlimited. I believe all the issues are there. There are a couple trades out there as well, but I would encourage you to look for the trade that has those additional issues that I talked about that include the Champions and other titles like Spider-Man and Avengers, etc. The bulk of the issues that I have of the Champions actually came from dollar bins. I had to purchase a couple of them at full retail from mycomicshop.com, but that's because I got impatient towards the end of collecting the entire series. I really wouldn't pay over $2 for any of the issues except for issue 1, and I would pay probably up to about $10 for a decent copy of that issue. I wouldn't pay that much more. I've never really seen this issue jump up in price, and just a lot of people don't have an awareness or a desire to want to collect this particular series. So the next question is, why would you want to add this to your collection? If you like oddball groups, then this might be worth checking out. If you like the Defenders, the X-Men, or the Avengers, I feel like this would be of interest as well. The characters that cross over give hints to these other titles as well. Issue 4 was written by Mr. Claremont, so if you are a Claremont completist, this needs to be on your list. And the last group is, if you love classic early Bronze Age from Marvel, this fits the bill. That wraps up the first episode of the second season. I want to thank everybody for listening. Appreciate all those comments and emails that you guys send in. Next up, we're digging through the archives. We're going to do a DC title called The Phantom Zone, which is a 1982 series that stars Superman. I want a big thanks to the staff here at Center Neptune Studios. Also to our legal advisors, Dewey Cheatham and Howe. We'll see you next time.